Maybe you took some time off over the holidays, but how does the balance look on your vacation days? If you're typical, you're sitting on a lot of untaken vacation time. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We work hard, our lives are stressful, and a lot of us don't do a lot to alleviate that stress. Over the long term, that can be dangerous. Today, I'll talk to someone who had a very serious wake-up call about dealing with stress at the age of 43. We'll talk about mindfulness and dealing with stress on a daily basis, and then we'll talk about those unused vacation days and find out about one company that offers employees unlimited vacation time. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our bodies tell us when we're stressed out. I'm sure you've had tense shoulders, maybe an eye twitch, or some insomnia. For some people, the physical manifestations of stress can be far more serious. Today, we're going to talk about the negative effects of stress, coupled with our cultural unwillingness to take time off or time out. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Bev Klug, Director of Mindfulness Programs at the University of Iowa, and we'll also talk about the importance of taking time off from work. My first guest today, Brad Smith of Coralville, had a very frightening wake-up call about stress and many other things nearly 2 years ago. Hello, Brad.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And let's go back a couple of years. You're 43 years old. What happened?
I began experiencing intense pain in both of my elbows, and the day before I had a pretty strenuous workout, and so I just determined that I was aging and had tendonitis, so I took a few aspirin and sat back down, continued watching television, and then about a half hour later, the pain came back, and so on the advice of my father, I drove myself to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, and there it was determined that I was in the midst of a heart attack.
Wow. And you mentioned a strenuous workout the day before. You were an active guy, right?
Yeah. I always considered myself physically fit, cardiovascular problems, run in the family. It's genetic. So I was fairly careful about the food that I ate. I did not eat red meat, etc. And so the news came as quite a surprise to me.
So you hadn't had any symptoms or any experiences before that that led you to think that you might be suffering from heart disease?
No, not at all.
Now, of course, as I mentioned earlier, for some people, especially if they have heart disease or high blood pressure or other things that are going on with their bodies, that stress can be a very dangerous thing. In your lifestyle, would you consider it to be a high-stress lifestyle?
I am a traveling sales representative, so yes, it can be quite stressful.
In your recovery from this heart attack, did you think a lot about the stress in your life and how that might be affecting your body?
I did start to, after my heart attack, I became a participant in the CHAMPS program at the University of Iowa, and they helped identify stressors in my life, and so I did become aware of the stressors in my life.
What kinds of things did you start thinking about that you hadn't thought about before?
More of a balance. I was pretty much a road warrior, early mornings, late nights. Clients always came first. And after my heart attack, I realized that I really needed to reevaluate my life and my lifestyle.
Can you tell me about some of the changes that you've made?
I now, just in sleeping patterns and whatnot, try to average 8 hours of sleep every night. I switch from drinking coffee to drinking green tea. Exercise is vital. I now, before my heart attack, I concentrated primarily on muscle growth and building, and now it's basically reversed, whereas I spend anywhere from 30 to 90 minutes on the treadmill and then concentrate on resistance training for probably about 20 to 25 minutes afterwards.
So you've really focused much more on the cardiovascular kinds of
Very
exercise.
Much so.
Do you also work on relaxation techniques?
Very much, yes. One of the techniques that which I find very helpful is I have an evening routine which helps me relax at night. It usually starts anywhere from an hour to 90 minutes before I go to sleep, and it's just I turn off the television, I turn off the computer, I begin just to I get myself some chamomile tea and just start to unwind for the day. And then when I go into bed, I start out with my just tensing and relaxing my extremities, then work up to my core, continuing up to my head, relaxing my muscles, and then tightening my muscles, and then relaxing my muscles while taking deep breaths throughout the entire procedure.
How has your body changed since you made all of these changes?
I don't want to sound flip because heart disease is very serious. However, having my heart attack helped me reevaluate what is important. I used to suffer from headaches on a weekly basis as well as some digestive problems. And since my heart attack, I have not had a single headache or any problems with digestion. So it's really been a very positive experience. In addition to that, I've lost 20 pounds and feel that I'm in the best shape of my life.
You still have the same job, right?
Yes, I do.
So you're still traveling. You're talking to us right now from an airport in Texas.
Yes.
How do you manage that part of your life, the work part of your life, to keep this balance and find time and space to really keep your stress low and take care of yourself?
I make that, along with nutrition, I make that a priority. My heart condition has forced me to do that. So whereas I used to, when I was tired, make excuses saying, you know, I'll exercise tomorrow. Now, that doesn't come into play anymore. It's maybe I'm getting up an hour to an hour and a half earlier, but then going to bed an hour to an hour and a half earlier the night before. Scheduling myself so that I can, instead of just grabbing a meal, you know, and then hitting the road again, that I can actually sit down at a restaurant, be served, enjoy the experience, and then get back on the road. So it's about time management and setting priorities.
What do you wish you had known before the heart attack that you know now? What could you share with the rest of us who haven't had that kind of a wake-up call?
Listen to your body. It's, you know, the headaches were telling me something. Go to your doctor, have a physical if you've not been to the doctor for a while. Have your blood tested. Know what your triglycerides, what your blood pressure, what your cholesterol levels are so that you can be proactive with your health.
You sound like a much healthier man today than you were a couple of years ago. Do you think you're a happier person as well?
Most definitely. Just being able to set priorities, really figuring out what is important and letting the other things fall by the wayside right there will reduce your stress and give you goals to aim for.
It almost sounds like you're happy you went through this.
It sounds odd, but it truly was probably one of the best things to happen for me. My grandfather had a heart attack when he was 48 and lived to be 90, and I would like to surpass that, and I'm aiming for 100.
Brad, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Brad Smith of Coralville, and although not a lot of us have heart attacks because of the stress in our lives, a lot of us go through life with those tense shoulders and eye twitches and headaches and all kinds of other things because of the stress that piles up in our lives. And we're going to talk about some ways to alleviate that stress this hour. With me now is Bev Klug. She is director of mindfulness programs at the University of Iowa. And Bev, listening to Brad talk about all of the stress in his life, and obviously, it was complicated with a heart condition, but in some of the things that he was saying, do you hear a lot of the stories that you hear a lot of the time when people come to you in need of help?
Oh, sure. Life is stressful, and it's complicated, and that's true pretty much for everybody. So in mindfulness practice, we talk about acknowledging that and really recognizing that it's true just because of the nature of life. And we're not so much in charge sometimes of the stressors that are in our lives, like Brad didn't choose to have a heart attack, but we can be in charge of how we relate to those things that are stressful in day-to-day ways and in really dramatic ways sometimes.
Can you define mindfulness for me?
Yes. Mindfulness is kind of hard to talk about. It's really a practice, but in a nutshell, mindfulness means being present with what's happening as it's happening, rather than jumping ahead to all the things that may happen in the future or be stuck on things that have happened in the past or just being on autopilot, you know, going through the motions of living our lives but not really living as fully as we might. And with that awareness that comes with actually being present with what's happening, whether we like what's happening or not, often comes a greater ability to respond skillfully to what's here rather than just react automatically.
All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk about ways to learn how to be more mindful and some of the benefits of that as well. Then later on this hour, 75% of all employees in the United States take less than the amount of vacation time that they are offered. We'll talk about why that may be not a great thing, and also some ways that you can take advantage of what you have in your life to alleviate some of that stress. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You're welcome to join our conversation. The number to call is 866-780-9100. Again, my guest is Bev Klug. She's director of mindfulness programs at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the stress in our lives and some ways to deal with it and some ways that we as a culture choose not to deal with stress in our lives. We'll talk about a lot of unused vacation days in a little while. But with me right now is Bev Klug. She's director of mindfulness programs at the University of Iowa. We were just talking about what mindfulness is, being more present in your daily life and not thinking always about the future and moving on. Bev, how do you teach people to be more mindful?
Well, mindfulness is something we actually have, but we tend to lose touch with it. So if you think of really young children, like under the age of 5, they're mindful. You know, they're present with what's going on. They don't have a to-do list that they're worried about. They're not much worried about what happens next or what happened in the past. And we have that ability, even as adults. But our lives get busier and we get lots of responsibilities and get caught up sometimes in just kind of going through the motions.
Well, we even try to train it out of our kids in many
ways,
too. Yeah,
hurry up. Get
Please,
out the door.
Get ready
get
for
the car.
Right. That
right.
Just this morning.
Yeah. Sounds familiar, huh? Yeah, and that's a really good point, that we need to be intentional both with ourselves and with our children about really being with what's here, even when we do need to get out the door in the morning. And it's about how we do that. And there are certain attitudes that we cultivate in mindfulness that support us in doing that, as well as just paying attention differently. So there are fun ways to get out the doors in the morning if we can remember to do them. And there are not so fun ways. And so it's, we really work a lot with how we respond to what's here rather than just getting caught in the same old stuff. And so it's very much about being aware. So if I'm experiencing something stressful and I know that, then if my shoulders are up to my ears and I know that, then I have some choices, like I can bring them down or see what's contributing to that and maybe change how I'm relating to what's going on, even though the same stuff might go on.
Well, I think a lot of people have this feeling when they think about how incredibly stressful their lives are. They think, well, yes, it's too stressful, but I have a job. I have to make money. I have to be successful
Absolutely.
In my career.
Absolutely.
I have to take care of the kids. I have to take care of the house. I have to get the laundry done. You're not recommending that people need to give these things up.
No, I'm not.
So can you give me an example of maybe a beginning practice that, mm-hmm. that you introduce someone to mm-hmm. that could help them cope yeah. with the stress of daily life?
Yeah. Well, Brad touched on it. One of the things that he learned from his experience was to listen to his body. And many of us are really out of touch with our bodies. And our bodies are barometer for what's going on. You know, if the shoulders are up to the ears, that's a body sensation. And if we can cultivate the ability to be aware of the body, then we are getting that read. And it's telling us what our level of stress is oftentimes. And so one of the first practices that we usually teach people is called a body scan, which is really, it's not about relaxing or feeling a certain way or getting rid of pain or anything. It's really about learning to just notice what sensations are in the body at any given time. And so there's a practice when people come to our programs, they practice that with a guidance each day. They come to class once a week, but then they have practices between sessions. And one of them is learning to listen to the body. Another one is learning to come to the breath, to feel the breath in the body, because anytime we are being aware of a sensation in the body, like the breath, we're not caught in the automatic thinking mind. It gives us a little moment to reconnect with what's actually going on.
And once you become more aware of what you're feeling, does that help in some way, just the awareness?
Yeah. And a lot of people say, well, I don't want to be aware of stress. I want it to go away, right? Well, good luck. So, yes, the awareness itself often, you know, again, if I use the shoulder analogy, if I notice my shoulders are up here, they automatically come down just from noticing whether I try to do that.
Which changes how you feel.
Right, exactly. And so we very much focus on being present with things as they are and the life that you're living, not the one you thought you would be living or the one you wish you were living or somebody else is living, but what's happening right here, right now. And the question is, how can I be here with it in a way that's helpful to me and maybe to those around me?
I want to get to the phones now, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Carolyn is on the line from Iowa City. And Carolyn, this is you listened to Brad's story earlier, and this is kind of your story as well. You had a heart attack, right?
Well, I had a cardiac arrest,
okay,
which is different. I didn't have any damage to my heart muscle. It just stopped beating. I had complications of blockage, but I also had a low potassium, and that's what happened.
And what did you learn from that experience? Obviously, that's a pretty frightening thing to go through.
I actually wasn't present for the for the frightening part. I woke up, you know, everyone else went through the frightening part, and my dear daughters did, and I had a wonderful man stopped his car and gave me cardiac well, what I don't know what's called. Anyway, he kept my heart going. Dr. Doug West at the athletic department kept my heart going, and before an ambulance got there. So I wasn't really experiencing the frightening part. But what did I experience from that? Well, I certainly learned to live a healthier lifestyle, and I learned, as you've been talking to others, that I cannot, and none of us can, especially women after menopause, cannot ignore even the slightest symptom. I had shortness of breath. That was probably my major symptom. My daughters alerted me to it. I just would not hear of it because I felt like a very active woman. I took care of toddlers from 7:30 to 5:30 every night. There's hardly any sitting down. And so I could scoop up two toddlers and climb over, you know, a toy or two and you know, carry them around. And I felt quite capable. I thought, well, of course, I'm an older woman. I'm going to have a little shortness of breath. But the truth is, and this is the most important thing, and Go Red for Women luncheons teach this all the time, that you should not have a symptom. It doesn't matter what your age is. Don't write it off. Don't make excuses. If you have a shortness of breath, a fatigue that seems unreasonable to you, you need to talk to your doctor, and you need to talk to your doctor over and over and over until that symptom is alleviated. And that's the only way to avoid, you know, having some of this hair-raising experience like I did, where it just takes you down and you don't have a choice anymore.
Well, and Carolyn, now that you know you have heart disease, and obviously there are things that you have to do to manage your health, but you've also worked on reducing the stress in your life. What have you done to change that?
Well, I've decided not to be super teacher. And that was a little complicated by the fact that I totally loved what I was doing. And even though at the end of the day, you know, which would be very long, before the children came, you know, 6:36, I'd be up. And until they left, maybe at 6, 12 hours later, I was enjoying every minute, but it was constant. And I would just fall asleep. I would just sit down if I dared to sit down. A lot of people know that this happens, that I would just fall asleep. It should have been, well, actually, my daughter did alert me to that, and I just brushed it off. But now the way I manage stress is I decided not to be super teacher, and the children actually don't need me to be. That was kind of fulfilling some of my own needs and not so much what the children needed at all. They were happy for me to be with them and in a lighter mode, probably. So I have learned to pace myself, to put my health first, and to enjoy life. And I just enjoy the moments with the children. That's what really counts. Teachable moments are what really count with children, and not necessarily all the bells and whistles that you can pull out in a day.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today, and I hope that you are much healthier now. That's Carolyn Gallagly from Iowa City, and with me, Bev Klug, the director of the mindfulness programs at the University of Iowa. And Bev, before I talk to Carolyn, we were talking about how you don't necessarily have to change your life. Obviously, if you have a serious health condition, you may have to change what's going on in your life. But through mindfulness practices, you're trying to help people manage what they're doing in their lives, not necessarily recommending that they need to give things up.
Yeah, we're actually trying to help people live their lives rather than be somewhere else. And many of us are somewhere else rather than here. So we are very much acknowledging that people have, you know, all kinds of things going on in their lives. And what we're cultivating is the ability to drop into it. So, you know, we're going to talk in a few minutes about taking time off, but we actually talk about taking time in and really being present with what's going on, because this is our life and this is it. It's what we've got.
Well, I know in my life, and I know many people have this experience, there's so much to be done that you're constantly going through that to-do list in your brain and thinking about what you have to get done. How do you help people manage that? Because these are important things to do. How do you take it away from
well,
the brain?
We not only work with the body, but we work with the mind as well. And there's actually really good research coming out about now about what happens in the brain when people practice mindfulness. But we all have a million thoughts going through our head most of the time, and we don't even know it. And so part of being present and aware is knowing what's going on in the mind. And so right here, right now, I'm talking to you, and how I'm present in this conversation is different than if I'm thinking about what I need to do when I go back to work. So if I notice that I'm going to, in that direction, and I can be aware that those are the thoughts that are here right now, then I can come back to this conversation, which is where I really want to be and what's actually happening. All of that stuff that comes up in the mind is usually about what might happen next or something, some memory of the past or something. And so many of us are really dictated by what goes on in the mind without even knowing it. And that's part of what pulls us into that constant feeling like we're in the to-do list. And when we're in the to-do list, we're not present with what we're actually doing, which matters. And we're not present in our lives. We're missing our lives. We're in the story of what needs to happen next or what we think needs to happen next. And it doesn't mean that we, you know, sometimes we do need to pay attention to the to-do list. So can we know that when we're doing it, when we're, or we need to make plans. So it's not about never planning ahead, but can we be present in the planning? Or present in the remembering if there's something, you know, useful about thinking about the past, which there is sometimes.
As people are learning mindfulness, do you have some simple techniques that you can use to help them put that to-do list where it needs to be?
They are simple techniques, but they take practice. You know, everybody wants the quick fix of how can I be less stressed? The 10 things to do that will make me less stressed. And that's really not how we do it. I mean, it's we have 8-week programs, and they are 8 weeks for a reason, and they're pretty intensive, and people really have practices, and the practices are simple, but they don't get integrated into our lives unless we practice them with consistency. So one of the things, the mindfulness program is actually based on a meditation practice, but it's not about being a Buddhist or being a great meditator. It's those practices cultivate the ability to be present. So we use sitting meditation as a way to just sit and notice what's going on in the mind and what's going on in the body and what emotions are here. And we practice not judging those as good or bad or right or wrong. And that helps us to be able to do that in daily life with consistent practice.
You have some words of caution about vacation time. We're going to talk about vacation time here in a moment. But you think that a lot of us pin too much of our hopes on what a vacation might bring us.
I do. And let me start by just saying I'm a big fan of vacations myself. But I think part of what happens is vacations can sometimes be really stressful, and part of that stress is we live on the little gerbil rat wheel 50 weeks out of the year waiting for that 2-week vacation or whatever amount, and that is really not very satisfying. And then a lot of people talk about how their vacation, they're worried the whole time about how soon it's going to be over, or, you know, it's not what they expected it to be. So that can be really stressful. And I think it speaks to the need to actually be able to find those, as I said earlier, to be able to drop into our lives and have ways of cultivating the things we enjoy about vacations in our daily lives.
When I looked through some of the programs that you offer, I noticed you work with kids. You work with teenagers to teach them mindfulness.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess a lot of us wouldn't think that that's something that would be needed. Teenagers are going to be fine.
Oh, teenagers are incredibly stressed out. And we have a wonderful teacher, Carrie Ennis Potter, that taught West High for many years. And she's our teen mindfulness teacher. And we're finding that teens really benefit from the practice and are able to engage in it. And so it's really, it's never too early to start, I think.
Did you come to this in your life? Was there a point at which you realized that you needed to be more mindful in your daily living?
No, there wasn't a point. I mean, I've always been interested in this country, we call it alternative medicine, but it's actually it's traditional medicine. And so I've been interested in things like yoga and meditation and have practiced those in my life for a long time. And this particular practice spoke to me in a way that others hadn't, because it's so accessible to daily life and so practical, really.
And I'm sure you've helped a lot of people with it.
Well, thanks. There's some evidence that that's true.
Bev Klug is the Director of Mindfulness Programs at the University of Iowa. Bev, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
In a moment, we're going to talk about all of that unused vacation time. In just a moment, Dave Gould will be here with us. He's a faculty member in leisure studies at the University of Iowa. And Tom Halterman is CEO of Outcomes MTM in Des Moines, where they offer unlimited vacation time to their employees. We'll talk about how that works as well. And we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been talking about managing stress and mindfulness, and now we're going to move on to vacation time, and in particular, unused vacation time, which Americans, Iowans, have a whole lot of. 75% of employees in the United States take less than the amount of vacation time than they are entitled to in their jobs. With me right now is Dave Gould. He is a faculty member in the Leisure Studies Department at the University of Iowa. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Charity. It's nice to be here.
Nice to talk to you, too. And we know that in other countries, other people are entitled to more vacation time than we have, but that doesn't seem to matter in the United States. We're not going to take it anyway. Why do you think that is?
Well, the numbers from last year, which the annual vacation deprivation study had it that we're about 2 days of vacation time. Americans were leaving about 2 vacation days on the table, if you will, which is kind of an amazing thing when you think about it. Something that they've earned, something that's owed to them, that they essentially are just kind of giving back and choosing not to break away. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a real timely one, which is that I believe people are fearful in this day and age to take vacation time for the belief that that they might be seen as not as productive as the person next to them. They might leave themselves vulnerable for layoffs. We live in a kind of a workplace often that that productivity drives everything. What did you do for me? You know, yesterday kind of a notion. And to take some time off to be seen as somebody who wants that leisure time, to allow others to come in and kind of show that they could fill your job maybe. They didn't need you the couple of weeks that you were gone are things that are very fearful.
And so we're afraid of what our bosses might think. Are we also worried about other employees? Do we think other employees judge us for taking time off?
I think the whole workplace is a very competitive nature. It's about productivity. It's about, especially today, about showing your value and your productivity. And so subsequently, that type of culture. I mean, many office places, if everybody in your office doesn't break for lunch, they eat at their desk, and you are the one individual that that goes out and grabs a lunch and comes back, I think there's an uncomfortableness. And so it's while there's a timeliness to it with the economy and the recession that we're just coming out of and all of those kind of things, and that certainly speaks to the moment, there's much larger cultural issues that go on as well. But before I speak to the cultural, there's also the issue in our country that when you do take that vacation time, what do you come back to? I was gone, I took Friday and Monday, so a 4-day weekend. weekend, this past weekend. I had no internet access. When I arrived back to the office Tuesday morning, I had 175 emails waiting for me.
And that's conservative.
yeah, exactly. And this is winter break.
Right.
And so those are ones that all of a sudden start my day in a hole. And I think that people, if they do take vacation time, were thinking, can I really be gone for that long a period?
I remember one of my former jobs, before I would go on vacation, I would work probably until 9 o'clock at night the day before I left. And then the day I got back, it would be the same thing, trying to, you know, get ready for being gone and then dig out of that hole. I think a lot of people have that experience.
Exactly. And if you think of it in cultural terms, look at some of our industrial countries and other parts of the world. Not only do they value vacation time in such a grander way, but they plan for it. It's organized in a way so that when you take time off, it's planned. We've got coverage. You don't come back to that big hole.
And you think we're addicted to this kind of super stressful lifestyle?
Well, you know, I think that it was interesting when Bev was speaking. She talked about missing our lives. And I think vacation time is obviously a piece of a much larger cultural puzzle. We lived harried lives. We are always moving at great speed, and so certainly that notion of being in the moment is a critical one. But we culturally. If you think of other parts of the world, they think we're crazy. American companies that are, let's say, in Europe, I have colleagues of mine who have left companies in the U.S. and just gone to kind of the European office. And they quickly learn how our culture, I mean, the sitting at a desk, the working late, is looked at as what is wrong with this person. But culturally, it's very, very different here. We drive very, very hard.
All right. I want to bring Tom Halterman into the conversation now. He is CEO of Outcomes MTM in Des Moines. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Charity. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for being here. And a little over a year ago, you changed your vacation policy to make it unlimited vacation time. Tell us how that works.
Sure. It was actually just last October we started this program. We call it My Time. And basically it provides employees an unlimited vacation policy in terms of we went away from the traditional vacation hours or what we called PTO or paid time off, where an employee might have a set number of weeks of PTO per year. We went away from that into an unlimited policy where it's not even being reported when they're or tracked the amount of time that they're taking.
Okay. And Tom, I'm sorry. I just need to clarify. I thought it was October of 2011. It was just this past October?
Correct.
Okay. So this is a very new policy for you.
Yes.
And so far, of course, we've had the holiday season, a time when a lot of people do want to take time off. How have you seen things working?
Well, it's been very well received by our staff. Some of our management team, when we first announced it, perhaps had some more questions about with concerns about perhaps it being abused or the potential for it to be abused. I believe firmly that for 99% of our workforce is going to use the unlimited vacation policy responsibly and use it to help them become a more productive employee.
Well, and I can understand management maybe thinking it could be abused by the employees. I'm sure that the employees might also feel a little nervous about, okay, if I do really take vacation time, am I going to be judged as not as good a worker as the other people who aren't taking vacation time? Did you find that there were employees who were reluctant?
Well, our issue was, and I certainly heard what Dave was saying, and I agree with that. Our issue wasn't so much employees not taking time, but what the time they were taking, they were required to use it for. We have a relatively young workforce, lots of individuals in their 20s and 30s, and they're just at a time of life where they're getting married, they're having kids, their friends are getting married. And if we took an entry-level staff member at our firm, and they maybe came in the door with 2 weeks of vacation time, they exhausted that 2 weeks on family and friend and more obligatory type activities, and they weren't taking any time to recharge. As an employer, I want people to work hard, and then I want them to take some time to recharge. And in many cases, they were coming back to work more stressed than they were when they left.
Sure. I think we've all had that experience. As far as obviously you want a productive workforce, do you have allowances for other people to take over responsibilities if somebody goes on vacation time? I understand vacation time has to be approved, or is this, you know, if you get all your work done and you can take time off, that's okay.
It's really more focused on productivity than it is the logging of hours. You know, we're in an office setting where people are in an almost constant state of connectivity through smartphones and other devices. As an employer to presume that, well, that 5 o'clock hits, so the hours that people are putting in no longer count, just it seemed an out of date practice. At the same time, you know, we had some publicity around this new policy when it went in place, and you know, it's not the free ride that some people it is. Some people might think it is. Just like traditional vacation policies, employees still have to coordinate their time off with their supervisor. We still require them to be productive when they're in the office. And just what we're not doing is determining a set number of days that someone may take off. So they're coordinating with their supervisor in order to make sure there is appropriate coverage. So hopefully they're not coming back to as high of a stack of papers. I don't think we can get away from the fact that there are some things that people do in their job that basically only they can do.
Right.
And so anytime you take time off, when you come back, you're going to have an elevated stack of paper or email or however you're keeping track of that type of stuff. But what we're trying to do is at least minimize that back to work stress.
I know that you're not the first company to implement a policy like this. There are a few other high profile companies that have done it as well. But it strikes me that this kind of policy requires a lot of trust on the part of the employees and on the part of the employer. Have you found that it has changed sort of the culture?
Yeah, I think it has. You know, one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, when it gets to be, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, there's more empty desks at our office, and I'm fine with that. If people have put in their day's work, and you know, there's only so much tread on a tire. There's only so much work the mind can take in a day. And if somebody is really dead working, I don't need them to sit around and look and you know, stare at the clock, waiting for 5 o'clock to come. I just assume they went home and were with their families. So, you know, I think that when the policy went in place, I think that there were some situations where people were perhaps waiting for the end of the work day to arrive, even though they were done working. And now the burden is off their shoulders. They can go ahead and go home.
Has it changed how you take vacation time?
You know, this is kind of the philosophy that I operated under already. I've had people ask me about my workplace productivity, how I think about it, whether I see it as a sprint or a marathon. And my philosophy is I see it as a series of sprints. I like to sprint and then rest and then sprint and then rest. And I think that this type of policy really fosters that type of an environment where people can work hard and then feel comfortable taking some time off and work hard and feel comfortable taking time off and realize that they need to take time off for family obligations and things like that. But I also want them to take some time off to just decompress and re-energize themselves.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tom Halterman is CEO of Outcomes MTM in Des Moines. Just a few months ago, they changed over to an unlimited vacation policy. And Dave, we were talking just a moment ago about people taking time off to recharge. What do we know about how long it takes somebody to actually recharge and relax when they take a vacation?
Well, that's interesting, because what we believe is it takes about two weeks for the whole recuperative process to occur. And so, as you probably can guess, we are not taking that kind of time. So the ability to truly unwind, very, very few of us are taking in that kind of a lump sum.
All right. Yeah. 2 weeks is a long vacation in our culture. So even if somebody's taking a two-week vacation, they really just get to that unwinding point, and then it's time to go back.
Exactly. And you know, speaking from a business perspective, there's a lot of wonderful reasons why a business would want their employees to take this kind of time off and to be able to recharge. I mean, you and I will go home tonight, and we'll take our cell phones, and we'll take our iPods, and we'll plug them into the walls, understanding that need to recharge. No business would run their nice, expensive, equipment 24/7 and risk damaging or ruining it. And yet we tend to do that with our human capital, our people, that if you will. And creativity drives businesses in the 21st century. And so that ability to have time away and to be able to innovate is a critical matter.
Frank is on the line in Knoxville. Frank, you've been extremely patient. Thank you so much for calling the show today. What would you like to talk about?
Oh, well, I heard your show, and I'm on vacation myself. I'm heading to Paris today.
Oh, wonderful. And you've always made vacation a priority for you, right?
Well, I think it's been a learned behavior in my family since my parents took us to Colorado, Canada in the summers, or Mexico in the wagon. It's kind of a learned behavior, and it was also an educational tool for us. But what we've learned is how important it is to take a vacation now and again and get away from everything. And so this will be my 10th trip to Paris, but it's not business-related. It's just for leisure.
Wonderful. How long are you going to be there?
Not 2 weeks. I'm not going to do that, but probably all week, 7 days. So.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Frank, have a terrific time.
Thanks for your program. Bye. Yeah,
thank you.
Arrivederci. Au revoir. Au revoir.
All right. And Dave, do you take your vacation time? You work for a university. Universities are fairly generous with vacation time.
They are very generous with vacation time. I have a wonderful boss that encourages it. And also there's a rhythm to the university that has always kept me there. In 2 weeks, 2 weeks from yesterday, the new semester will start, and it'll be a crazy, crazy time of sprinting, as Tom was talking about. And then in 15, 16 weeks, all of a sudden, the town will become quiet, and people will take vacation, and it'll be a much more relaxed atmosphere until we hit it again in the fall. I struggle, as anyone in our culture does, but I certainly value it. I also would like to make the comment that when you think of vacation time from a kind of a personal point of view, from a family point of view, I would argue that a lot of those memories, the memories that we have deepest of our connecting with our siblings and our parents, are awfully often on those vacations, the times that we're exploring together, kind of being on adventures. And so when we take those out of the equation, I think we lose a lot of that family connectivity, that kind of memories, if you will.
Well, and vacation means a couple of different things. I mean, vacation can strictly mean time off from work. Vacation can mean going on a trip. Do you think that just that time off from work, just that taking a day and spending a day at home, is that something else that we're lacking in our culture?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from what we know, I mean, taking time off from even a 20-minute break to a week vacation, to a two-week vacation, whatever it might be, recharges us to some degree and improves our performance and gives us a mental break. And I think, yeah, absolutely, those are valuable. Kind of a stress relief day in a 4-day week with a 3-day weekend. Absolutely.
All right, Dave, thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure.
I hope you've enjoyed it. Now you have to go back to work, right?
I do.
All right. Dave Gould is a faculty member in the Leisure Studies Department at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, with technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.